News Talk Breakfast, in association with AIR, supporting your business on our mobile network right across Ireland.
Now let's get a broader view of the evolution of social protest in Ireland. And we're joined by the head of sociology at University College Cork and co-editor of Social Movements in Ireland, Niamh Harrigan. Niamh Harrigan, we don't really have much of a history for we do have some history of violent protests, but in terms of the water protests, we're not like the French. The French do that all the time, but this seems to be a new precedent for us, is it?
Well, I suppose our history, Paul, has been very much shaped by the history of the nationalist movement even prior to independence. So if you look at the 19th century in Ireland, you had kind of two strands of nationalism running. One was a very established tradition of democratic public mass protest, of which Daniel O'Connell and subsequently Parnell were the real champions of. And then subsequent to that, obviously, you have a strand of more militant nationalism, which was, you know, embodied by a smaller group, which was also in some ways linked to that movement. After the foundation of the state, what we see is, you know, relatively little actually what you call society level protest at the national level. And one of the reasons for that is perhaps the traumas of the Civil War, but also the fact that the church, the Catholic Church, actively discouraged protests at the national level of the kind of joining the barricades type that we associate, for instance, with the French. And one of the reasons that the church did that is they were concerned that some of those big national protest movements across Europe were anti-clerical. And so one of the things they did through organisations like Mhuire na tÉire, etc., is that they encouraged Irish people to think of the community as the correct level at which protest should take place and activism should take place. So we see the legacy of that even in things today like Tidy Towns, where people will get out and get involved at their community level. And I suppose one of the things that we see then is rural communities being very active in terms of protest in the 20th century, farmers in particular being a very active group. But that pattern of kind of community-dominated protest really being dominant. And it only starts to break down in the late 60s when the kind of grip of the church breaks down and the reproductive wars start, essentially, and the feminist movement are one of the first movements to kind of start.
But they were never as well organised or coordinated or as aggressive as, say, the water protests were in recent years. So obviously,
I don't necessarily know. I mean, if we look at 20th century Irish protest, there would certainly have been very well organised protests. The question of whether they're aggressive or not, Paul, I think it's more an issue of whether, if we look, for instance, at the water protest, we're living in an age of social media, so we're very familiar with what happens at particular incidences. It would be very difficult to make that call. Remember that we already are post Sheltesea and Rossport, where there were several very intense confrontations between protesters and Gardaí as well. I think one of the there's two pieces if we're looking at what's happened today or yesterday. The first is kind of how Irish society views protest and how we do protest. And you have to remember, Paul, one of the reasons that the Right to Water campaign is so successful is it combines two of those historical elements. It combines protests that are embedded in communities and then which have a kind of work up from the community to a national framework. And that's why this was such a formidable social movement for the state to deal
with. But the extreme left have basically carved out a role for themselves now. It's the angry man in the street, and they've galvanised that support. I was referring earlier about other more violent H-block protests and stuff like that back in the 80s. But what impact will this verdict have on future protests? It gives them quite a high degree of legitimisation and validation, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, the right to protest, Paul, is a right that's available across Europe and people are entitled to protest. This is a key issue, really, about how protest is policed and how the state is responds to that protest.
Actually, on the issue of police, how it was policed, how do you think of this particular protest was policed, this particular incident that led to the trial over the past 3 months?
I'll be honest with you, Paul, what I really think from the Gardaí's point of view, I mean, one of the things that we see as part of protest is part of protest, particularly if it's hostile to the state, is about inciting the state to react. And if the state reacts, then you lose.
But the state didn't react in this. They were very peaceful.
That's a matter of opinion, Paul. And I think the issue for the Gardaí here is that the history of the Gardaí is very much about policing from within the community. They're the guardians of the peace. They're an unarmed police force. That's their tradition. Mm. That's their culture. And therefore, I think when you take a movement like Right to Water, which is very embedded in the community...
I know, but what do you mean? Let's go back to this very specific case. I looked at the videos. The videos were there for everybody to watch.
Well, I'm not here to comment on the specific case, Paul, in fairness. I'm here to provide the bigger macro picture.
But you did mention the role of the police. But the role in the police in this case, the police in society generally are the agency through which the state expresses its monopoly on the use of violence or legitimate force. But in this particular case, there was no force used. That's the point I'm making. So you mentioned the role of the policing in this.
Yeah. And essentially what I'm saying is, I think from the Gardaí's point of view, in terms of what lessons have to be learned from this particular case, they need to look at how they police community-based social movements, particularly if those community social movements are seeking to incite a reaction from them, Paul. And there's no doubt in my mind, you know, the six people in question involved have been found not guilty. There are lessons to be learned on many sides here, but for An Garda Síochána, there will be lessons to be learned here about how they respond to particular types of protest. You know, what we are seeing happening in Jobstown is happening across Europe. You know, people on the left will protest. They're entitled to protest. The question of how the state responds, and particularly how the Gardaí negotiate their relationship with the state in terms of that response. But part of the lessons that needs to be learned here.
I know, but you are a very respected sociologist and criminologist, so I just want to ask you, what would one of those lessons be for the Gardaí when you look at what happened in Jobstown?
Well, I'm not an expert on the policing of protest, Paul, but I think the outcome of this and what happened in this trial has not been a particular success for the Gardaí. And I think, you know, what Right to Water was a very sophisticated movement. And I think they need to learn the lessons about how you police protests of this level at community level.
Okay, Niamh Harrigan, Head of Sociology at University College Cork. Thank you very much for joining us.
News Talk Breakfast, in association with AIR, supporting your business on our mobile network right across Ireland.